That's what I do.
Okay. We're ready.
Are we going to go back in session at 10 o'clock with our next agenda item, which would be, Chad, do you want to come forward and talk to us about your concerns?
You bet.
Brian, I mean.
Brian. Thanks for having us. Give y'all one of these fancy handouts. Kind of old home week.
Yeah, Brian, how are you?
How are you?
Good.
Good to see you. Is there one? There ain't too much to
see on there. There's just maybe we did kind of a little petition thing, got some names on there.
Be wrong,
and let's see, got a good carriage, you get one?
Well, I gave mine to Joyce, so we'll
okay.
Get an extra one.
You want that one?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
So basically we're just here to ask and request if the county would consider taking over the road on Antelope Ridge Estates subdivision, which we did. It's been about 10 years ago we did the subdivision, and the roads, you know, I think the big thing is the roads and the easements are all, you know, in place to be county roads. And the main reason is basically because the county does a way better job of maintaining the road than the homeowners association, basically probably anywhere in the world. So we would love and if you guys would consider taking it over. It'd just be a big deal. It's the proximity of the subdivision is, you know, close to town, so it's not like we're out in the boondocks asking for a county road that's way off the beaten path. So that's basically our story.
That's your request.
Yep.
Okay. Commissioners, do you have any comments? Or who would like to start with comments?
Mr. Chairman, I guess a question, and I don't know if this, does this petition reflect all the homeowners that live in that subdivision, or?
Most of them.
That's a majority of them?
Yeah. More than, it's almost all of them.
How many are there?
There's like 20 some property owners, and then we own the rest of it.
Okay, and I guess how many lots total are there?
There's 64 lots.
64.
Yeah, 64 total, 20 are sold, and of those 20, I think 15 or 16. I think that's everybody who has a home there. And some of those people own two lots, just have a home on one.
But all these people use the road?
Yeah.
And the other thing I think that is a little bit relevant is there are 20, in the neighborhood of 20 other people who access further north through the subdivision on Spring Gulch Road.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Baker, go ahead.
Is the red, is that delineating what you're asking for?
Yeah. Those are all the roads in the subdivision.
And it comes off the Eamon Lane there.
Yeah, I think I know.
You can recognize it. I didn't do a real great job of showing the vicinity map, but.
So, Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I guess in my mind there's quite a few things to consider that go along with this. Number one, we would need to get an idea how this might add to our budget, how much more we're going to have to add to Road and Bridge budget to maintain this road. And then we also need to consider, we've got, I think, six other subdivisions that the roads meet county standards. And I guess in my mind, if we're going to take over this road, we probably need to be in a position to consider taking over any other subdivision road that meets the county standard, which I'm not necessarily opposed to doing that, but we've got to have an idea what it means on our budget if we're going to do that. Are we going to hire the equivalent of one more road crew? I have no idea, but we need to get feedback from Billy on that. Probably before we decide, and and consider, you know, how, I think I got a list of six roads here that probably meet that same criteria as what it does here. And if we're gonna, I guess my point is, if we're gonna take over this road, then we probably need to be prepared to consider all of them. And if we're gonna do that, then we probably need to have some criteria that would decide, you know, is it just automatic? Somebody makes a road to a county standard, we take it over. Do we have criteria based on traffic counts, on use? That'd be something we would need to look into to decide who gets priority. You know, I have no idea if some of these roads might have 10 times as much traffic as this one, or maybe not. I don't know. But I guess with all that in mind, it's probably premature to make a decision today, but it is something, you know, if we're inclined to do this, then we need to look at the big picture. I guess that's my point.
Well, Commissioner Bousman, you're exactly right on those counts. We did, not too long ago, have a request from Hoback Ranches to take over their road. And I know in the course of that discussion, there were several things that came up in terms of criteria, including not just easements, but traffic counts. And you're right in the fact that we as a county already have probably at least six road projects or roads that would come under that same classification. So my concern would be that, and I'd like to maybe hear the other commissioners weigh in on this, but would be that if it comes to that, are we going to do all the roads? Are we going to make a priority list? And if we're going to make a priority list, what's going to be the criteria for determining those? Is it going to be have to do with population, number of houses, people served, traffic counts, etc.? So, and then the other thing Commissioner Bousman brought up is we already have our budget request in that came in on May 1st, and however we were to proceed forward, if we were to take this over, it's going to have some impact. I don't know how many miles of road you would consider in there. I have no idea from looking at the map. I do know that just from rough figures, it cost us in the neighborhood of $5,600 per mile to maintain our county roads. So there's going to be at least a minimal and maybe a more significant impact that I think we would have to take into consideration before we were to make that decision. But I think Commissioner Bousman brings up some very valid points, and I'd like to open up to the rest of the commissioners to see if you have any other ideas or thoughts.
It looks like 10 years ago is the last time the county took on a county road, 2009. And that was Iroquois. No, I'm sorry, not Iroquois. Meadowlark. That's what it says right here. And so everybody was bringing the roads up to standards, but then it all stopped for whatever reason. And so everything everybody has said is exactly correct. Who goes first? Who gets to have their road be a county road? Because the line is going to go out that door that everybody is going to want their county road. And I, when I was running for county commissioner, I was, I don't want to say confronted. I was asked, will you get my road be a county road? And it was First North, Second West, and Second North in the Meadowlark subdivision, because it was being brought up to a class one road or class two road, and then it stopped. Just instantly, and no one in that subdivision could figure out why, but it's right there. It stopped. It was closed on First West in 11 of 2009. So everybody wants the road to be a county road, and I don't blame them. I don't blame you guys.
Right.
But how do we do it, and how do we pay for it, and how much is it going to cost? And I can guarantee you, and Billy, you would have to hire more people.
Oh, yeah.
If we took on these 10 roads, plus the road that these guys are asking, that subdivision, and maybe many more.
Definitely.
If everything's a three-man crew, that does our roads in the summer, it would take maybe 6 new employees.
Yeah.
So I'm with Joel on the discussion of not opposed to it, but we need more discussion. There's no question about that.
Mr. Vickery or Noble, do you have any comments?
Well, I guess I'm wondering, I see the little short red lines, which means they go right into the house.
Into the cul-de-sac, yeah.
Into the cul-de-sac. So I guess if I'm looking at it and I was in favor of it, I'd want it to be sort of a loop and not run into every cul-de-sac. I don't know if that's a doable thing or not, if it come to that. But those little short runs, I can't imagine how much time that might take for a blade hand to run in and run out and do a proper job. And then if it's a county road, you're going to look at snow removal at some point, I would assume. Same thing, the big outfits going in, making it so it's what it's supposed to be. You know, quite frankly, I think Joel said a lot for most of us, because it's going to take a lot. I mean, it's a thought process that we have to look at before we can just say yay or nay, either way. And here again, I don't blame you guys for coming in, because I know what it's like to live on a county road, although the county road was there before I moved there, so that was a savior. Yeah, it's exactly right. I guess, in the future, if I didn't see all those little red things, I could look at it, you know, from a standpoint of, will we be inundated in the future from, as Joel spoke, other subdivisions? And I think that certainly has to be a talking point, or be prepared to do it, quite frankly.
Well, there you're right. There needs to be some parameters so we're consistent in making that choice, because when Hoback Ranches came to us, we did tell them at their own expense they were going to have to do traffic counts. They were going to have to do, I don't know if there was some surveying or engineering, but I think before we can make a decision, we're going to have to get together and establish those parameters so that we'll be consistent across the board, because there will be other requests as well. There's been, whether it's an unspoken or just an event that's happened, the county hadn't taken on any new roads in 10 years. Is there a reason for that? I don't know. Does it mean we're never going to do county roads again? I would hope not. But I think if we're going to look at that going forward, we do have to have some consistent guidelines that we're going to apply so that we can establish priorities when we get multiple requests. Otherwise, we'll be taking on every road that meets county specs or standards.
So I can't help but, you guys have developed more than this subdivision, which we all know. Why did you choose this one? Because the one just to the south has way more residents in it, densities and all that. It would seem like a more logical subdivision for the county to accept, just because of densities.
Absolutely.
So why, and so that has two points to it. One is, why did you pick that? And I think the other one's up to a better standard to some point. It's all got asphalt and chip sealed. So I guess I'm curious as to why this one, and then after we, let's say for example, we do choose this one, you're going to be back for the other two or three.
Yeah.
Only human nature. I mean, so I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It addresses exactly what you guys have been discussing. That other Wild West Way, there are five different subdivisions that access off that road, chip sealed. The short answer is, we only own a couple of lots up there still, and nobody, in terms of the homeowners association, feels has been able to put together a group of people that thought that was important. We don't feel like it should be us driving the bus on that, given that we're basically sold out. This one, different story. Only 20 out of 64.
So
that's
getting into the financial end of it. For example, the homeowners association and this Antelope Ridge, you guys own the majority of the lots still currently. And do they pay homeowners association fees to these residents? And do you guys pay those same fees on the lots you own?
We don't, but we take up the what they end up paying is significantly short of what it costs
to
do it at this point.
Fair enough.
So we make the difference.
So for financial and everything, so we're more benefit, obviously.
Correct.
Well, and I think one thing to that too, it's kind of a unique point where we still are majority owners of it. Mm-hmm. So it's a good place where, you know, we don't have to get 50 people to agree to have it be a county road, right? Mm-hmm. We have the majority of the vote, so to speak. So, like he said, those other subdivisions, well, heck, even if you offered them a county road, you'd probably still have a hell of a time getting them all to agree to it.
Ironically, I'm not sure they would agree at this point with what I know about other development.
In this situation, we're saying, yeah, we obviously some of the things you said, Tom, but there wouldn't be a question of everybody agreeing to make it a county road.
Sure.
And like you said, Doug, you've lived on a county road, but it was a county road before you lived there, so, and same case for us, too. Had we had a say now, hindsight, you know, we might say, gosh, well, I know we say, gosh damn, I wish some of these weren't county roads now, in hindsight, but you totally understood why. You can see why they wanted them county roads 50 years ago, or 60, or whatever it was, because
none of them had any density.
Mr. Chairman, to address what Brian just said about county roads, if I could take that section from our property line and close it down for the next 3 months during all that fishing traffic, I'd do it in a heartbeat. So there are times when you don't want a county road. I understand perfectly well, and there are times when you really enjoy it.
Yeah.
So that's, and I can understand why you would want this. It would obviously enhance, I would suspect, lot sales.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the conclusion is that we're going to have to look at how we're going to move forward with county roads in general. We're going to have to involve Billy with Road and Bridge, not in terms of just cost estimates for the budget, but cost estimates in terms of increased personnel and the impact on that. But more importantly, we're going to have to come up with a consistent set of standards that we're going to use. So I think that, I don't know, I'm not going to give you a date and when that's going to happen, but it's not going to happen, unfortunately, today or before this next budget.
Mr. Chairman, just one further point, just thinking back in the past, it had always been a consideration, at least, as far as the benefit to the taxpayer of spending money on making a new county road is has had to do, what Doug said made me think about it, has had to do, does it provide public access beyond just the people that live on the road? In other words, does it go to BLM? Does it go to the forest? And does it, so is it a benefit to the broader public than just the people that happen to live on it? And that, in the past, that's been a consideration, because this board has always publicly supported the concept of public access to public land. And that was basically one of the reasons some of these roads were made county roads years ago. It wasn't necessarily because of the one rancher that lived on the road. It was because the road went through these ranches and went out onto BLM or the forest, and so it benefited more than just the people that lived on it, so to speak. So, so that's also something that needs to go into the formula if we were to develop some criteria. Is what is the benefit? Who does it benefit beyond just the landowners that are joined the road?
Good point. Thank you, Commissioner Bowman. Anything else? Do you guys have any other comments?
Okay. Well, no, I just appreciate your consideration, and hopefully we can get the ball rolling or something. You know, I mean, maybe address some of those things that you brought up, and everybody basically brought up the same things, but you know, and it hasn't been a subdivision turned into a county road for 10 years.
10 years.
Maybe it's about time.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Today, there maybe this year would be a good time. Huh?
Well, there again, if you'll see the counters on your road, you'll know that we're moving forward with figuring out how much traffic there is. I'm not sure. I can't speak to that.
No, I don't.
I think speaking for counters, we're not going to start counting public, I mean private roads either. So if that would be something for you guys to consider on your own, mm-hmm. if you really think you have that impact of road traffic, that would be some more data that may be useful in the future.
Sure, and I guess we'd be more than willing to do that. It's just a matter of maybe knowing up front,
you know, a standard.
What a standard might be, because we could probably get a fair idea of what it was before counting it. But
because that main Spring Gulch Road, you know, it gets a lot of use up beyond the subdivision.
And I guess I'm not exactly sure. Does that get to some public land up there? I would bet it.
Or does I don't know.
Not that I'm aware of.
No.
Because it'd be Wilson's and Benning's and kind of borders the north end and kind of landlocks it in for the public. So I can't think of anything right off.
Another consideration that we would need input from Road and Bridge is if the county's going to be maintaining the road year round, do the existing easements give us room to do snow catches in places needed? I don't have no idea if that's an issue where you guys are talking about or not, but some of these subdivisions it is that we need to either be able to get outside of our easement, like a lot of people allow us to do that, but just to keep the road open better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Billy would need to take a look at on any of these potential situations, because that without having the ability to plow snow catches where we need them, then that greatly extends the cost to keep the road open. Once you get to a certain point, you got no place to put the snow.
In
some cases that's important, some cases it's not.
The winter season's actually put more of a demand on Billy than the summer. I mean, everybody can drive a bumpy road, but when it's below full of snow, that's when they're really
get the problem.
They're on the phone, call, yeah. So complain.
My concerns are winter for all these, because they all want it done 6 in the morning so they can get to work.
Okay.
Enough. Thanks for
thanks guys.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. See ya.
By the way, being laid up, I read your Aunt Mary's book.
Oh yeah.
That is good.
Yeah.
Please
good.
Please relate to her how much I enjoyed that.
All right. See you guys.
See ya.
It was good. I read it too.
Is it your turn?
All right. Thanks, Billy.
See you guys.
Sheriff,
40 of them.
Yeah, this is just 40 of them.
Mr. Chairman, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm going to have Kenna come up with me because she's here. We'll start it off with.
What did you do? Before I say ARG, maybe.
Search and rescue statistics.
I keep trying to convince people to do summer accessory, but nobody wants to join.
We're going on with the movie.
Reminds me of a movie, True Grit.
But I have to get it out. Continue, Sheriff.
Okay, so what Ken is handing out is some 2018-2019 search and rescue reimbursement requests for the missions we had. Last year and this year, on Thursday, we travel up to Jackson for the biannual Search and Rescue Commission board meeting, where we will find out if, you know, if the state will reimburse us for all the funds requested. And then I'll have Kenneth kind of go into what all the activity that's on the horizontal page.
Wait, yeah, so it starts off with mission number 5, simply because I just follow the year with the state reimbursement package. So it shows missions 5 through 37 plus the first 3 of 2019. And it's just a quick breakdown for your guys' information of what we did, where we went, the type of personnel that it and resources that are required. With that information, then I'm able to, with the other regular size page, those are the missions that accrued costs that we're asking the state council for reimbursement for. They reimburse anything mission related, whether it be just the gas, the travel, motel rooms, the Sharpies we have to buy, the fuel, whatever it should be. It's replacing lost damage equipment during missions. So, you know, almost $125,000 that we're asking the state star council for. The helicopter itself was $419,000 and change this year. And that just goes to show how many days that it doesn't get used, which is the unfortunate part, but it's ready to go. That's where we pay the daily fee. This is where we spend a lot of time in the spring working with the fellow counties, promoting the use of it. You can see from the last 4 years, we've asked for either $20,000 up to, last year was $37,000 in reimbursement requests. This year was the $125,000. And it goes to show how much more it was used by fellow counties. We cover that cost initially, knowing that we'll get a full reimbursement if the SAR Council so sees.
What is the daily fee?
The daily fee goes up $50 each year. So this year it'll be $26.50 a day, just to sit.
Okay.
So we encourage, you know, all those fellow counties to use it. Mm-hmm. And they're calling more and more, which is...
That's not $26.50.
No, I wish.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I wish it was.
Okay.
So, and then we, there were several this year that have some parentheses that talked about they paid, and those were non-SAR uses. So YDOT used it for avalanche mitigation, just maintaining their equipment during the summertime up on Teton Pass there. Radio work on Commissary Ridge that Lincoln County did. We slung some dinosaurs for Virginia Tech. So a variety of issues there. Well, even we had the big rescue in Buffalo in July where we went and helped Johnson County with a climber. And during the original mission, he deceased overnight with my team on the mountain with him. And so the next morning, it was still part of the rescue mission. So we needed to pull all the rescuers and the climbing partner off. 3 days later, when there was a break in the weather, we went back to help Johnson County coroner recover the victim. And so they paid those costs outright. Other than that, that's Silver Canyon in a nutshell.
Where is Mary's Lake?
Mary's Lake is between, it's on the Pole Creek Trail.
I just said, that is Silver Canyon.
Yeah, it's it's from the Elkhart Park Trailhead.
Okay.
Yeah, main highway.
So, did all these on this list involve the helicopter?
No, nope, not all of them involve the helicopter.
Okay.
I can.
Some were snow machines, some were four-wheelers, some were horse.
On this big list, instead of having a separate sheet for just the helicopter use, 0FS is the tail number for the helicopter, and it's always listed first if that's resource was used.
Oh, okay.
So you kind of tally there.
Yeah.
Could you do, this is a little bit separate, could you do for me a breakdown of the use of the helicopter? That I've had some requests for that I could take to NACO.
Mm-hmm.
I always make the point we use our SRS money for the helicopter, but I've never provided a breakdown of actually what gets done on the ground, and I think that would be useful to some of the people in Congress.
Okay, great. I can do just very short of why it was called, the resources used,
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
The time, you know, the length of the mission.
And sharing with other counties, I mean, all that is.
Sure. All that is good. Gladly.
That include trainings and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because we'll spend a lot of Thursdays and Saturdays, it looks like, in June, going over and helping pretty much all of our surrounding counties with a day of. It helps us kind of get a jump start on the season. It encourages them, you know, to remind them that it's there, it's available. But we get a lot of the safety briefing over with. So then when we get called for a mission, it just helps expedite.
Be great.
But yes, I can provide that to you guys.
So use has gone up.
The use has gone up a lot, yes.
Okay.
Do you ever keep track of out of this entire list, how many people live in Supalack County?
I do. Do you remember the pie chart or the little graph charts that I brought you guys? That actually has the list of how many.
Okay, were. I've got that.
Oh, that's actually just Wyoming residents. So it did not break it down into
just Sublette County residents.
You don't want to know that.
Okay. That's kind of why I didn't. I was hesitating to ask.
Yeah, but I understand. That was just Wyoming.
Sure. Thank you.
That is the basis for making it legitimate asking for some federal funding.
Exactly. Sure. That is. That actually is a big.
Far more than just Sublette County residents. Mm-hmm. In fact, more so non-residents.
Exactly. Are you saying we're more careful?
I probably shouldn't answer.
I've got an answer for that, but I'm not
going to
give it.
I guess that depends on whether they consider you a native Sublette County resident.
There you go. Ooh, yeah.
which I'm still not, by the way. Yeah. Either, so. Any more questions on the...
Yeah, any questions? Yeah, I appreciate your guys' support in the past. Commissioner Bowman, you know, can't thank you enough for... The federal support that you seek, and
yes,
all your blessed as well, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, those the SRS and the PILT monies are, I mean, crucial,
right?
Crucial to this helicopter.
We're very aware of that.
We didn't have them, we couldn't do it.
Every September, we have that fly in. I've been doing it now quite a few years, and we go around and lobby Congress, and I present the information on our helicopter.
Well, so. Between June and September, you want to bring them back to Sublette County again, we'd gladly do another show and tell.
They enjoyed that.
And we want to open that up to commissioners, too. So training for the helicopter will be the weekend of June 1st and 2nd?
Yes, May 31st. We'll be at the airport all day. The part of getting the season started off is the pilots have to pass a proficiency test. Following the National Park Service and the FAA regulations. So they'll be doing their testing. We bring a third party in to conduct that. And then Saturday and Sunday, we will be at Little Half Moon Lake, and we will be doing what we call a recurrence. So it's essentially the recertification of our shore home members. So it's a great visual, if you guys want to kind of come see what's entailed in that. It's easy access. You're more welcome to come with us.
You want to go for a ride in your screamer suit?
And
no.
We can put you in your screamer suit if you'd like.
I'll
come
pass.
On.
Okay, so keeping along the same lines of search and rescue, I sent out two copies. So this legislative year, the legislature passed a bill authorizing county search and rescue volunteers members to participate in the volunteer plan, which is the volunteer firefighters, volunteer EMS for the state. So part of that is the requires a monthly contribution for each member, amount of $30. And we were wanting to see if the commission would be interested in covering that cost for the search and rescue volunteers. Right now, search and rescue has 42 volunteers. Breaking it down, we feel that roughly a little less than 15% would actually qualify for this, just because they must meet certain requirements. Yes, not less than 2 meetings per month. They have to be there for 50%, and we feel that probably less than that, maybe, I mean, a high side of 8% would actually be interested in this plan. So you're looking at maybe 5 to 8 members, at $30 a month. If that's something you'd be willing to consider, or even cutting that in half, the volunteer firefighters is $15 a month. Why they pick 30 for search and rescue, I'm not sure, but that's what it is.
That was one of the questions I was going to have.
Yeah.
My initial thought is just to help supplement, so we are not taking away from firefighters and EMS. I think they maybe doubled that just to make sure that there's enough money in the pot, so when those pensions accrue, they won't have to charge the firefighters more or the EMTs more.
We're late in the game, and so I think just help build that confidence.
They're drawn out of the
again,
same pot,
I
so they're making them catch
I
up.
I can't yeah. say that for sure, but that's just my personal belief, and that's why it was so much higher.
Right, and the $30 per month would only be for the ones that are qualified and interested?
That's correct.
Okay. Yep. And so initial qualifications is what, 5 years of service?
No, it's 5 years to become vested.
Okay.
So any member that currently meets these criteria can become involved in the pension if they so wish. There's an application. The search and rescue agency has to send some bylaws with these requirements stated in those bylaws to the state office. They have to be approved before we can even participate in the plan.
Right. But how many do you have in search and rescue? You said only...
So 42.
42.
Or only volunteers.
8 or 10 that are going
to
participate?
I would say you could take it to a dozen, but that's going to be a high number.
That'll be a high number.
If, Casey, if you got people involved in this program and they decided to no longer participate, they could not take that money out of the retirement.
That's not correct. So any money that is put into the pension account belongs to the member. So anything that the county would put in for that member would be the member's money.
See, in the state retirement, you can only take out what you contribute.
And that, so...
But it's up to 80%.
That's correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There will be a 30% buyout.
Sure, but it doesn't stay in the retirement fund. It belongs to any contributions made by the member or on behalf of the member belong to the member. So if they were to leave in 5 years, they could pull that money.
Sheriff, help me understand, because I'm not sure if I'm getting this right, but what you're saying is only 25% of the people would be willing to participate.
No, would be qualified to participate.
Okay,
and whether those 25% would want this, I mean, so take for instance Milford Lockwood, who's been a search and rescue member for 20 years.
Right.
This really isn't going to benefit him.
Right.
However, there is, once you reach your tenure, which is 5 years, the state is offering a 10-year buyback for those members. So if he were to participate for 5 years, in that 5 years, he could potentially buy back 10 years of service or credit.
But they would have to do that with their own money.
That would be their own money.
Their own money.
Yes.
But is it retroactive for time served already?
No, it is not.
Point forward?
Just from July 1st forward or whenever we enroll in it. Okay. And in all fairness, this will be presented to the team next week to get accurate numbers. I know the interest is very high of people wanting to participate, but it's those that are truly qualified and will stay qualified. Meeting the expectations is hard. I have a lot of members that are seasonal. I only see them in the summer because they're busy during the winter, or vice versa. I only see them in the winter because they're so overloaded in the summer. So those individuals will have to do some thinking on their part of they would have to meet those qualifications 12 months a year. Every month they have to meet those calls to continue to qualify.
There's just accountability.
Yeah, so total accountability. So there is a very high interest, but it's those that are actually going to be able to fully invest in this.
Is that based partly on like so many hours a month or what?
No, they're just saying two meetings a month, and you have at least two meetings a month. And there is a gray area of what defines a meeting, but we have at least two trainings, a team meeting and a training a month. And they have to attend at least 50% of those. So if I had six meetings a month, they would have to still attend 50% of those. So
Mr. Chair.
So this isn't tied to any salary or paper call, nothing to do with that. It's just a flat-out contribution to the retirement center.
Correct, because that is, as far as volunteer retention, it's the one kind of incentive we have for them because there is zero compensation.
Do we do something similar? Do we pay part of our volunteer firefighters contribution?
100%, yeah.
We pay 100% of that now?
Yes, but luckily theirs is $15.
It's only half of it,
so yeah. But yes, they
same way with EMS.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So, Mr. Noble?
I don't have any problem at all supporting this. I can't support our volunteers enough. As far as I'm concerned, they're putting in their own personal time away from their families, and this would be a small benefit for their time that they put in. I support this completely.
Well, I think your intention, of course, is recruitment and retention.
Retention.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If this would help, that would be wonderful. We appreciate your support.
Do we, but you don't have a number?
No, I'll have an accurate number by next month. So like I said, I need to actually present this and show them, you know, in detail exactly what is going to be required of them.
So what do you need from us today? Just discussion, inclination, thoughts?
I just think letting you know that this is in the works.
Okay.
And, you know, the possibility that it's there.
Okay.
So.
And as we're asking, you know, I guess in your budget considerations for this next year of whether you will support this or not, because that will depend on, you know, depending on what you guys put into it, then what they may have to make up a difference or.
Has this already been put in a budget request?
No,
it hasn't.
No.
It hasn't because we didn't know.
We didn't know numbers. Again, this was just, you know, this came about this year. It will go into effect July 1st of this year.
So, Mr. Chairman, so it'd be a little bit premature to do something without a number to do something with. Is that correct?
I agree.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
No, this is just more for heads up information.
Yes. Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, just one final thought. If we're contributing $15 a month now to our fire and EMS, I guess, and this, if we do it, requires a minimum of $30 a month?
Yes.
But so if we put in 15, it would mean the individual would have to come up with another 15.
Right.
Or if we put in the entire 30, then probably we would need to consider raising everybody else to the same level. Maybe. I'm not sure.
No, the requirement for
Fire EMT is only $15.
That's from the state. That's from the retirement system itself.
Right, but as far as the benefit to our volunteers,
they get the same benefit in the end. It's just the state mandated the 30 to catch up, so they weren't drawing out of the pool.
Yes.
Of what the fire department and the EMS have been putting in there for multiple years.
So
it's the same benefit in the end.
It's the same in the end.
Yeah.
So that doesn't matter.
Carrie has a question.
We don't contribute to EMS retirement.
The healthcare district does.
Yes.
Right.
You're right.
Well, I'm inclined to support it.
Yeah.
We know what we're talking
about. So, Mr. Chairman, so let me get this straight then. The $15 is the whole deal for the EMS. But for search and rescue, which you don't have yet, they're going to require $30 as the total, of which we could make up the whole thing or a portion thereof. Is that where you're coming from?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Okay, we are duly informed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Thanks, Kenneth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys very much.
Thanks, Kenneth.
All right, I'll try to move along here. So, next topic. I didn't have it on the agenda, but I'd like to bring it up because it is regarding budget. So our out of sight, out of mind. Is our local animal control officer for the county, Monty Miles, and. His current budget, we're going to hold the line. Right now it's at $35,000. He has never received any type of COLA along with the county employees or a pay raise for several years. Monty has been with us for 3 years. I pulled some statistics on the number of calls he's getting and the number of calls he's responding to. Right now, over the past 6 months, he's responding anywhere from 4 to 6 calls a week. And he's taking multiple calls per day just on the cell phone from several county residents. We currently have enough money in our budget line to increase his wage or his salary and not exceed what we're asking for with that line item. I was just asking for approval to give him a raise in salary. For his work.
And why did he get one previously?
Because he is not a, I don't believe he's
full-time?
A full-time employee. Yes.
It doesn't draw benefits then or nothing?
No benefits, no anything. And I looked around. I can't really compare him to the town ACO just because they are a full-time employee, but they have so many other jobs descriptions with that, and they do receive benefits. So it's not, I wouldn't be, I think it's fair to compare his to theirs, even though it is substantially less than what the town animal control officer makes.
And so you are in favor of this?
Yes. No, and I also feel if we don't just, I would hate to lose him. He's been a great asset, and I have not received any complaints or anything on this, and does a fantastic job. Very self-motivated, will go out on his own. You know, he doesn't need, prompting or anything else to get out into the county. And
does he get present. Calls from all over the county?
Yes. Yep. North and south.
Mr. Chairman, a question for Casey. I'm assuming from this discussion he doesn't really fit anywhere in the salary schedule. In other words, if we do him, is there going to be another list of people that fit that criteria that we need to do the same thing?
For the sheriff's office, at least I can't speak for the entire county. He's the only part-time person that we have right now. Part-time employee.
And you're saying you have that money within your budget?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Where we wouldn't have to increase that line item for next year.
What kind of increase you think? Yep, so the county officials got 2% last year.
Yes. Yep.
Similar to what's in.
Well, I was thinking more than that, just because he's never gotten anything. And I went back as far as I could, even when Juan Batista was here, and I couldn't find any increases even through there. So I was thinking, pretty substantial increase. So he's making, right now it's roughly $1,600 a month. We're looking at bumping it up to $2,000.
Okay. Concerns?
I have no concerns. I believe that this is your call.
Yeah.
As long as it falls within your budget.
Okay.
That's my. Yeah.
We do have some other county employees that are part time. That maybe we should think about addressing this during the budget, because there are other part time people.
I think Shad has a handful, don't you?
Well, that's when we consider all county employees. Mm-hmm. Salary and benefits, so I think that would probably be appropriate to do it at that time. See what other requests we get.
Would it make sense then, Mr. Chairman, to put in a line item in a salary schedule for these kinds of employees, or do we just helter-skelter decide, well, we'll give this one this, give that one that? Does that create
an
issue?
Right now.
That's what it is now.
Yeah. But it does need to be addressed, because there's no avenue for them getting a raise.
Or even a COLA.
Uh-uh.
They're overlooked, basically, pretty much.
But there are a couple of others that need to be addressed.
Sounds like the time to do that would be during the budget process.
But wouldn't that be up to the department head or whomever to bring that to us?
Sure.
To explain it.
Yes. But that's, I'm just putting that out there, that there are others that we'll need to look at. And, Casey's request is his own, and I'm not trying to interfere, but I just wanted to let you know there are others.
Well, there are no secrets in Sublette County, so I'm sure that before noon, every department head will say, I got to put this in my budget.
Some of them don't have a department head.
Okay, what's that?
Some don't have a department
well,
head.
Well, somebody that is in charge of that person will, it would be their responsibility, I think, to come to us, just as Casey has. Mm-hmm. To say,
well, the idea is to have some consistency.
Consistency.
Mm-hmm. That's my point. Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Chairman, I have one question to ask Mr. Mayor. So, if it's within your budget, did you anticipate this increase to occur before budget session, like this coming month?
No, so based on what we have, so we have a specific line item for animal control, and this includes the ACO's salary. The number we had in there last year, we did not spend as much as what we anticipated. So looking to the future and the budget for the future with the pay raise, if we hold the line, we will still be under what we asked for last year with that proposed pay increase for the ACO for his salary. So also what comes out of that is equipment and everything else for animal control. So instead of, we could have reduced that budget line item to be less than $35,000, but we would like to, you know, reward him for, you know, his service and also, you know, to give him some incentive to stay here by increasing his salary.
But you're talking increase, Nick, in the new budget year.
No, we will not increase that line
item. I'm talking about his salary.
When he would get the increase. When he
would it would go into effect, July 20, or July 1st. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think, I have no problem with that, but I appreciate and understand the concerns on the part of the other part-time people in the county, particularly those that don't have a department head. So I have no problems agreeing with your statement about it'll get out to the rest of the department.
Well, and the people that we're talking about, myself as a commissioner, have no idea who these people are. I don't.
Well, again, like I said, out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
Yes,
you don't get
absolutely.
Any complaints, you don't. Mm-hmm. However, they're not included with the rest of the budget, county employees.
So, Carrie, is there a chance you could compile a list of these people and who, what their job titles are? So we could look at that in a uniform way rather than from department head to department head as they come through.
In the budget letter that I sent out, it said the commissioners haven't had a chance to discuss employees or employee raises. So during the budget process, that would be something that we need to look at. But yes, I can put together a list of people that either don't have a plan for any kind of step increase, and there's really no one going to the board saying, well, this person has been doing this for a while and no one's asked for extra money.
But then are we obligated to give everybody the same, for lack of a better word, COLA, or the same increase?
Well, the step is different than the cost of living.
Yeah.
But some people don't have any kind of step, formal step.
No, but do we have to give the same increase to everyone? Because what the sheriff was talking about is a fairly significant increase.
I think if you look, there'll be a definite disparity between the, nobody's going to be the same as far as what their part-time salary is.
Yeah.
Or title. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we also need to look at, you know, if we're increasing time, then do they become eligible for benefits, and do we need a budget for that as well?
How many hours a week do you think he spends? I know you said three calls.
Four to six call outs a week. I mean, you're looking at 2 to 3 hours per call out. So what, I mean, with six, that's, you know, still less, 25 hours a week. So still considered part-time. Mm-hmm. But that does not, like I said, that does not take into account the phone calls he takes at home.
So they're all in the evening, probably.
Sure, weekends, holidays, yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know this discussion has to end pretty quick, but why aren't the other part-time employees under the purview, if you would, of a department head somewhere, so that it still would appear to me the department head should factor in what they believe should be adequate for the folks that are part-time under them? I mean, we can't have every part-time person coming in, can we? Don't we need to have, like you, for instance, are speaking for an individual under your guidance? It would appear to me we need somebody to represent the folks that they are in charge of.
Well, either be the department head or elected official that everybody reports to one way or another.
Right.
Well, for example, our sanitarian, health sanitarian, he don't have a superior, and he's works on his own, time. So that's one example of a person that has nobody representing him.
Then they point directly to us.
More so, yeah.
Is the way it works.
Okay, we need to, I think, move on. Because yeah, we've got a considerable amount of work to do before.
Okay, I'm just gonna blaze through this next one. So the I afforded Jim the opportunity to present this to you about the weather station to upfit that to put up into the Hoback Ranches. I will give you my personal opinion. The only reason I'm asking is because I respect Jim, and he has come to me think that this is a legitimate concern, and that it would benefit the people of the Hoback Ranches, and I do agree with that to some extent. My personal concern is that this station was given to us back in 2014. We have not seen or had a need for it until now. My concern is that we spend the money, we put it up there for a legitimate concern. When it's done, when are we going to need it again? Again, I don't want to sound like I am not for this. I am asking because Jim asked me, and so I kind of want to put it up to you if there's any questions or concerns. To upfit this right now would be just a little over $5,000 to get it up to where it would be working. I do know in the beginning that the federal government was going to put a approved weather station up there to do the same thing, and that fell through. So Jim decided to take it upon himself to try to remedy that and do it on the county's part, just to help to analyze moisture, how much rainfall, so we can prepare for sliding, closing roads, mitigation, whatever we need to do in the interim until Hoback Ranches can get back on their feet.
But prior to the Roosevelt fire, we haven't had a need for it in the last 5 years. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. Is this something that will be coming out of his budget or your budget?
It would be. However, I think that was the reason why he initially wanted to ask. He does not have the money for this in his budget.
Okay. Do you know if he's made promises regarding this?
Promises?
To people in Hoback Ranches?
No promises have been made.
I meant commitments.
Yes. No. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Casey, if we put this apparatus in there, how quick would the response be to solve the problem that may be created by rainfall, snow runoff, or whatever?
It would be like any other emergency. So let's say a tornado or a high wind warning. It would be fairly fast because we would have accurate on-site data. Say if we got 3/4 of an inch, downpour up there, we would know immediately, and we can start preparing because we know that there's going to be slides and hindrances to the road, to rim road especially. Mm-hmm. And possibly the existing culverts, the infrastructure, homes, flooding, So it would be rather quick.
But this would be targeted primarily for Hoback Ranches in terms of benefit.
Benefit today, yeah. Yes. Yep.
Okay. Would this be on Kismet? Or somewhere close to Kismet?
I don't know where the location would be. I'm not sure.
Where does information that it would generate go to?
So it would actually go to the National Weather Service and also to Jim. So it would be like any other weather reporting station, whether it be private or government, it would, they would request that data. So this would be national.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, how does it get back to the general population?
Right, so it would be through emergency alert, through our emergency management. So if we were to notice an extensive amount of rainfall, we could issue alerts similar to what we get now with any type of severe weather warning.
And that would come through Jim?
Come through Jim, would come through our reverse 911, yep, text to 911, or, yeah, the, not text to 911, but the alert sense.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I don't quite understand what the end result of this might be on the ground. So we have this weather station. It puts out information. We got 3/4 of an inch of rain in 2 hours. Put out the emergency alert. Does that mean we're going to have a plan in place ahead of time that would require evacuation of the homeowners? And what would it do? How would it ultimately benefit the people living in the houses, other than they'll know, well, geez, we looked, got an alert, we got 3/4 of an inch of rain. Right. What are they going to do about it? I don't.
They'll know it's raining and how
yeah,
much.
Yeah, that's what I'm having a problem.
I think we'll see the similar response to when we had the fire. I mean, some people will heed that and evacuate, and others will stay.
But do we know that there would be a need to evacuate? I mean, I could see where, geez, you know, we get enough rain, it might wash this culvert out.
Sure.
And I might not be able to get it down my road until they fix it.
Yeah.
We're all kind of, every one of us in the county is subject to that risk, I guess, based on a heavy rain when it happens to county roads all the time.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I'm trying to. I have a problem with is how's it going to work?
Is it going to make a difference?
Is it really going to make a difference? Is it going to save any lives?
Right.
It would be,
I guess, to be similar, hypothetic, you know, if the New Fork Dam ruptured, you know, and all the houses downstream of the New Fork Dam. I mean, what, yeah.
Well, in that case, you would want to evacuate.
Right.
But there's no dams in Holdback Ranches. There, you know, I don't see the risk. I guess it's my.
Okay.
So
that's just me.
I guess if we're going to approve this, we would need a motion to that effect. So, is anybody willing to make a motion to approve this purchase of this weather station as presented to give them direction?
Mr. Chairman, do you also need a motion to not approve?
Either way.
We would vote it down if we didn't?
Either way. If you don't have a motion, you don't have any action. So if you want one not to approve it, that's fine. If you want one to approve it and then have a discussion and a vote, whichever way.
Or no action.
I can call for a motion. Concerning the weather apparatus as presented by the sheriff. And if there's no motion, there's no action.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not willing to support a motion, but I am willing to state that if there's something we're missing here as far as a benefit, I'm willing to listen down the road for a future budget. But right now, I don't have enough information in my mind to justify doing it. I guess that's where I'm at.
Okay. Just for conversation, I understand where Jim is. He's just trying to do his job. Mm-hmm. And give the people some foresight.
Yep.
But I don't at this point support this either.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that decision, yep. And I'm sure he will too.
Okay.
I agree.
That's where we stand.
Okay.
No, thanks, Sheriff.
Yep.
What else?
Very last thing, May 13th to the 17th, firearm calls. So you guys are available anytime. Also, May 14th, we have a vendor coming in to demonstrate a training simulator. So if you guys want to participate with that, I would highly encourage that. Just if nothing else, just
when is the simulator?
On the 14th.
Simulator for what? I missed it.
So a training simulator. It's a three-dimensional realistic program with screens, and it will go through like a scenario: traffic stop, a burglary in progress, and the officer has to make split-second decisions on, you know, whether to use lethal force or not.
And that's one thing we could just observe.
Yes. You could participate as well. Okay. So
are you going to have time for extra?
The 14th.
Absolutely.
May 14th. May 14th.
What time, Sheriff?
It's all day.
I think it says start at 10.
Yeah. I think, yeah, 10, that would be a good 10 through 4.
I think that's what it was.
Yep. And any time. You guys are welcome anytime.
Okay. I appreciate that. I would be there, Casey, except I've got to be at Spokane, Washington at the WIR conference, right, or I would be there.
And I would be there for part of the time. I don't know how much.
Yeah, I will be also.
Intentions are to be there.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Case.
Well, 2 minute break, okay. Shad, you're so far behind. We'll see how we do. 2 minutes.
I'll hurry.
Oh, don't let me scare you with a pile of paperwork you're gonna get through.
Yeah, I understand.
Hey, Shad, I got
your email. What's that?
I got your email.
Okay.
Okay. I would really like to go. I'm not sure I'm going to commit to that yet.
Okay.
I'll just be a last second.
You just mentioned interest and I want to
know. No, I think it would be informational for me. It would possibly answer a lot of the questions.
Oh, okay.
And I think you can answer them though also. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to stay pretty abreast of that.
Yeah. At this point, I'm not going to commit, but if I can, last minute, I will.
Where's this envelope?
Eamon Lane.
Oh.
You know where the Burley Binning pit is? Joy?
Hey?
Do you know where the old Burley Binning pit is? Or, no, Shriver pit?
I haven't done it in a long time, but.
It's the same road that goes to Shriver's old pit.
Okay. It used to be kind of private. You couldn't tell if you were supposed to be there or not.
You take a right, take a left, and meander around.
Where is it from Reinhold's?
Reinhold's back this way, so.
Okay.
Oh.
A proposal coming from Josh Adams again.
Who'd you build the table for, Mac?
What?
Who'd you build the table for?
What table?
The big fancy binder table you hauled into the house 2 years ago. He lives right here.
On Eamon Lane.
Mikey McLean.
Mike McLean. Mm. Right.
Yeah. Or the kids.
Yeah, he's. Can't miss him. He's got trees and a nice yard right there to turn off.
Oh, yeah. I just come in time. Okay, yeah.
That bit from. Yeah. How are you?
But he hasn't
come up,
I guess.
They're going to
bring it down here.
Okay. That goes to Burley Bell.
Get something going on that side.
Okay. Yeah.
Would you like lunch early?
I'll try a
little. We may not have lunch.
Okay.
Do you want me to let Suki know that you may be a few minutes late?
Oh, at least. He'd have to tell her to bring it over here. No, we will be late.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell him to do whatever. Sure.
Best I can to be brief.
Huh?
I'll do the best I can to be brief.
It is what it is, Shad. It is what it is.
Yeah. Commissioner Burnett, something that's not on the agenda that I asked your latitude for, but I got a call late last night from Todd Hurd asking to present follow-up information from the last commissioner's meeting, but it's not on the agenda. Is it okay if I bring that up here to start with?
Yeah. All right, we'll be back in session as soon as Commissioner Noble. We're all ready. Go ahead, Chad.
I received a phone call from Todd Hurd. Normally, he would be here to present to the Board of Commissioners a follow-up from a discussion 2 weeks ago regarding the concrete foundation necessary around the fire station. I've received a quotation from Premier Site Development. Todd told me that he is unable to be here today. He had jury duty today and was unable to
present this information himself. So in lieu of that, I've asked the contractor, Dan Liskey, to be here in case there's any questions that came up, and we could work through that. But with your approval, I'll distribute the quotations that we've received. Actually, if you just, I mean, just take one and pass it around, that would be faster and more conducive to your time frame.
Yeah.
So if you recall, we received a quote 2 weeks ago, or at the last commission meeting, whatever date that was. And Commissioner Noble had some concerns about the snow load crushing the new siding. And this new proposal that you have in front of you takes in consideration for what was originally proposed for a 12-inch, I don't want to call it a stem wall, call it a curb. And instead of being a 12-inch curb on the north side of the building, that would extend to a 4-foot curb that would be decorative in nature to match the new siding.
Well, that's the concrete wall we talked about. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. This is the new updated quote to address the concerns that were brought forth last time.
Where does this estimate stand with what we were talked about anticipating?
So this would be a change order above and beyond what we originally budgeted for.
Right.
So there is no. Oh, you mean compared to last time?
Yeah.
Yeah. The last quote.
20,000 or something, wasn't it?
No, I think it's an additional. Yeah. I mean, $13,251 to do that additional concrete on the north end.
So because of what we discussed in terms of raising that wall on the north side, and all this is the estimate, and then we have the windows as well.
Yeah. So I've received more information about the windows. I don't pretend to be an expert on construction or necessary windows, but there's definitely a maintenance issue. All the windows currently no longer have the vacuum seal on the window. They all create condensation, and they all leak. The appropriate time to replace those windows would be now with the siding's off to minimize what we know is going to be a necessary replacement sooner or later. And so it's appropriate.
So there's all the windows?
Yeah, but there's only five windows?
Six. All except for the lighted windows in the upper portion. Those are aluminum windows up on the upper. We're replacing the ones in the office areas on the first floor. So it's about, I believe it's six, yeah.
So the question is, what choice do we have? We're into this project. This was discovered. This is the apparent solution. Not happy, but I don't know. The question is, what choice do we have?
Yeah. It was an unanticipated problem with building construction design that necessitated this change order.
So do we have a formal change order to approve today, or what's the plan there?
I had that last time, the change order. I didn't bring it with me this time. I'll bring it with over here before the end of the day.
Okay.
So, Chad, my question is for you and Dan. On the concrete, is this, you both agree with this fix?
Given what we have with the existing building, it's the best option.
Okay.
I don't necessarily agree with it, but the building should not have been built that way to begin with. We have what we have now, so I would say yes, this is our best option.
Do you see any further? Oh, what's the word? Are we creating more problems in the future, possibly, or?
No. I believe we're remedying the problem at the base.
Okay. I feel confident in that too, so.
Yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion. We approve the window change order for $6,800 and the concrete change order for $31,775 for the fire hall upgrade.
Second, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any discussion? Comment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay.
Thank you very much. While I'm on the topic, did we receive anything from Adams Concrete? Okay, then we'll dig into my scheduled agenda items. One of the first things on the agenda that I've asked to present to the commissioners, I've got two sealed bids for Wildland fire trucks. I'd like to present that to Commissioner Burnett to open. All things to do is just read the purchase amount out loud, and then if you can give me a couple of weeks to review the bids, I'll present a recommendation at the next meeting. Last time I did this, I didn't have an opening tool for this. I brought it along.
Yeah, well, we got here.
You
got
to give it back for me, though. There you go. There you go.
I've got my favorite.
My odds are better.
Don't cut your finger off.
I have only a 9% chance where you have a 10.
Yeah. So are these two sets of bids, I need to give you the bid amount?
Yes.
Okay, we have two bids, one from Front Range Fire Apparatus, the other from Heinen Fire Equipment. The total bid for, and I'm assuming these are the same apparatus, the Skeeter Type 5 fire brush truck?
Two different bids for the same Wildland fire truck.
Now, is this the Front Range one you're speaking of? No?
Yes. Okay. The bid that we have from Front Range is in the amount of $179,860. The bid that we have from Heinen Fire Equipment is in the amount of $175,439. So you would have to go over and look at these, review these, look at the specs, make sure they're the same, and then report back to us.
Yes, sir.
Correctly?
Yes, sir.
So there again, the bid from Front Range was $179,860. The bid for this fire apparatus from Heinen was $175,439.
Thank you very much.
They're competitive.
All right. Get along. I have a radio report. I would ask for Sheriff Lear and Dave Smith to come up and join me for the radio report, if that's appropriate.
If the gentleman could come up, please.
All right, so to begin on the radio reports, we had what's called a customer design review meeting, CDR meeting a few weeks ago with the leadership from Harris. This is a summary of the meeting. It's the last opportunity to review the fine details of the build out of the new radio system, the infrastructure, all the nuts and bolts, etc. And after the CDR, final approval occurs, and they stage all the equipment at their factory in Virginia. Connect it all, make sure it all works, and then eventually ship it to us for installation. During that CDR review, Harris had presented a estimate to us for the Enterprise tower. And if you recall, we've had some back and forth over the last year or so to try to address the availability to place our equipment on the Enterprise Tower, mount the dishes, antennas, etc. on the Enterprise Tower. Unfortunately, the Enterprise Tower, the structural analysis came back that it failed. We had performed a more detailed structural analysis, including a geotech and also the recommendations for structural modification that would be necessary. The estimate for the structural modification for the Enterprise Tower came back at $100,000. That was provided to us from Harris, and that was provided during the CDR meeting. So after the meeting from from Harris. I contacted the leadership at Enterprise and had informed them of the estimated necessary cost for structural modifications. Enterprise had expressed concern to me and said that while they do have some concerns about the additional antennas and equipment on the antenna, this says that even with the structural modifications, the new structural capacity will only be at 99.7%, and it would limit their future options for expansion or growth. So they'd expressed concerns about that. After a few more emails, I'd told the leadership at Enterprise that I would be meeting with the commissioners and would like to present options to the commissioners to review and take under advisements for future work on the build out of this Harris system. So I'd asked Enterprise. I made the assumption that it wouldn't be prudent to expend $100,000 on a tower that isn't owned by the county. And so I'd asked Enterprise, would they be interested in entertaining the idea of accepting an offer for the Enterprise lease? Enterprise responded back and said that they'd review it with their legal and discuss internally and get back to me. And as of right now, I have not received anything back from them. But I did want to present that to the commissioners that I am trying to explore that alternative. The one thing I would caution against is that tower was built a significant time ago, and it may be towards the end of its lifespan, even with additional structural modifications. And I'd be remiss if I didn't bring that forward. That there's some questionable lifespan, even after putting some improvements to it. So that being said, during the several meetings ago, we presented this to the board, and Commissioner Noble had asked us to look at what other alternatives may be available to create a brand new site, what that would take, and what basically not to put all our eggs in one basket and look at and see if there's maybe a viable alternative that we could explore further. So we had Dave Smith reach out to the BLM. Just take one and pass it around. What I'm having the sheriff pass around now is a map of a proposed alternative site that is adjacent to the Enterprise site. And the map that we're looking at is 4 linear miles away. The proposed new site would be 4 linear miles away from the Enterprise site. And then the second map that I'd ask the sheriff to hand out would be more zoomed in on the actual proposed new site. And the reason why I wanted to hand those maps around is I anticipated a little bit of discussion here about some options there to look at this potential for a new site. As we review that, I would like to bring to your attention. Originally, we'd spoke with the leadership at Harris and told them that there were some issues with the Enterprise Tower and that we may not be able to mount our equipment on the Enterprise Tower. Initially, Harris came back and said that would negate the guarantee of coverage if we modified the original design that they presented to us and went to a new site, that would negate their guarantee. Since then, I've had numerous phone calls with Harris, and they have assured me that will not be the case. That even if we do move to this new proposed, it's called a green site or a brand new site. Even if we do move to this new proposed green site, because the new green site is at an improved location at a higher elevation, that their guarantee of coverage will actually still be applied, and they will honor their original guarantee of providing coverage for the county. And they're currently working to provide a overlay of estimated coverage on the guarantee grid requirements. And as soon as we see that, we can actually see what their estimations of coverage will actually look like. I haven't got that to date, but the important thing is I wanted to emphasize that if we do look at the new alternative site, that it won't negatively affect the guarantee of coverage that Harris provided for us, and that's an important consideration. The other thing I wanted to pass around, I had an opportunity to meet with Commissioner Noble and Dave Smith yesterday with the leadership from the local BLM field office, And we discussed what it would take to develop a new radio communication site at this proposed alternative location. They were kind enough to produce a schedule of how they think the environmental review would occur, and they believe that we can meet an August 1st deadline of getting approval from the BLM to move forward with this alternative site, and I think that's a realistic goal and very achievable and within the means of the build out of the new Harris system. So I was pleased to hear that from the meeting yesterday. Sorry, Sheriff, I got several more. The next handout that I'm presenting to everybody, this is the actual cost estimate. This was produced by Dave Smith. David had put together a rough estimate so the commissioners could make an informed decision about the cost of a new greenfield site. And that includes building a tower, providing a shelter to house all the equipment, to run the necessary power, to do the necessary surveys, and what else am I missing there, Dave?
Just go down the list. I mean, the list covers the bulk of it. What's not on that list is a fencing. When it's all said and done, that won't be that significant. The numbers for the concrete that you're looking at, the crane, and the power are all estimates. Concrete is probably on the high side for the foundation. Crane is probably on the high side, probably 20 to 30%. The power is very unknown right now. We've worked with Rocky Mountain Power, tried to work with Union, and we'll continue to work with Jonah. Most likely we will get power from Jonah Energy. Those are all private lines that go down Lumen Road. They're not owned by Rocky Mountain Power. The PSCC says you cannot resell power if you have a private line. So we have to jump through some hoops, do some metering and stuff to make all that functional. And once we get that, we will get with a survey team at Rio Verde, and they will survey where that line can go in that road easement, and we'll get with the cultural people and the paleo people and the BLM, and then we can get it all approved where we can actually put some cable in the ground. The cultural number you've got on the page in front of you is an actual quote that was given by WAS in Rock Springs. They recommended we use Western Slope Paleo. I'm waiting on an email as we speak from Josh Smith, which will give us the numbers on that one. I estimated it at being equal to or less than the cultural. That was based on just the recommendations of everybody in the business of cultural and paleo. The tower is a hard quote. The building is a hard quote. And the building is a cookie cutter of the buildings we will have on Kismet and Hogsback. So it's basically one more of the exact same in the inventory, ditto for the generator. The tower is the same manufacturer and the same basic type as all our other towers. That tower is also designed to be extended to 220 feet. We're going to build it to 160. The loading that we've spec'd on that tower is very robust, allowing for a lot of future growth. So we're trying to plan ahead there, just like what we did on Hogsback in 09, which saved us a bunch of money this go around. So it's just the way we do it in the business. Okay.
The last thing for consideration that I wanted to bring before the board is that I've had several phone calls and emails back and forth with Jonah about the $20,875 that we expended to perform the structural analysis on the Enterprise Tower. Enterprise has agreed to apply this invoice as a credit towards the future change order, since the county is looking at the potential greenfield site. The remaining budget that was allocated will be transferred to the development of the new greenfield site.
So and how much was that?
$20,875 that Harris is willing to apply to the engineering necessary for moving to the new greenfield site.
Okay. I'll start the conversation, then I'll let the other commissioners add their opinions or comments. I think looking at a green site and moving towards that is my preferred way of going. I think the problems with taking $100,000 to do
structural modification on a 60-year-old tower that we don't even know if we're going to get the rights to lease or buy are going to be challenging, to say the least. When we initially had a discussion of alternatives, there was some concern about the time delay on this project, but with the work that you've done and the cooperation from the BLM, it looks like this thing could be on the fast track to be done hopefully by August 1st, but certainly in that time frame by the end of August. So I don't have a concern that it's going to be a significant delay with the whole project. I think the part of the pros on this would include that Sublette County would own their own tower, that we would have future capacity, and that we would have a sense of what we need to help maybe improve this project moving forward. As you stated, it's on higher elevation. So I'm starting out that conversation. I'll leave comments, turn it over to the commissioners.
Question, I guess. Would we not also have some additional expense at the Enterprise site in the building?
So the,
is that building that's there adequate as it stands?
Oh, I see what you're saying. It
is. We would have to do some light modifications to it, but it wouldn't be significant. I mean, you'd probably be looking at 10 or 20% the cost of this new building. The green site is certainly a more expensive option, but looking into the future of 20, 30, 50-year plan, this is like putting an engine in an old truck that the frame's rusted and the box is shot and nothing right. works in it. Plus, there's no guarantee on that $100,000 on the structural for the Enterprise Tower. Those are the old Western Union towers. They're built very robustly, but they're built in a time before any of the modern criteria that we have to build towers now with was developed. So they're really kind of an unknown. And the building does have some asbestos in it. It does have some other things going on, nothing that can't be dealt with. But you don't get any guarantees for another $100,000 that it's going to work. Plus, it's a not near as good a location.
So one other question. I'm assuming the cultural and the paleo is all part of the BLM EA,
yes.
environmental assessment.
We don't have to do an EA on the site.
Mentioned it over here on this paper.
It's not a formal EA like you would normally do. We do an SF-299 and a PDI. But it's not in the classic sense of an environmental analysis. It's not. It's the same.
Have to go out to public comment or anything like
that? No, there'll be one 30-day public comment window. We're actually going to be able to avoid. There's actually two 30-day comment windows. We're going to be able to avoid the first one. The second one will be done. But this is the exact same process that we did for Hogsback and the same process we did for South Rim.
So is that considered a categorical exclusion?
Pretty
it's
much.
Got to have a designation.
It does. It's and okay. we've already cleared the hurdles, mostly the preliminary hurdles for sage grouse, and the other one was the cultural. And what we did with the cultural is we moved it to the other end of the ridge, which isn't a significant altitude loss, and it just works out pretty good. The BLM has been extremely helpful on this, so they're really working with us.
Well, I guess for my part, I think we need to go for it. I hate the idea of spending more money, but like
the thing about steel and concrete on comm sites, that's the best dollar investment that you guys will ever do as managers of a business in a county, because the lifespan on towers like this is 50 to 60 years. The lifespan of the building is equal to that. You know, none of your graders, dozers, bulldozers, buildings, trucks, none of that stuff will last like these will. So.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with yourself and with Joel about it's going to be ours. And I'm in full agreement. My concern is the cost overrun, or where are we with our money in terms of that was set aside before we ever became county commissioners, when this was the beginning of the project. Are we going to be in trouble and have to come? We're fine with what was set aside to begin with. Good.
Mr. Noble?
I think Dave and Shaz and Casey have all been working on this diligently, and Dave's definitely the point on this with the BLM. And in my conversations with the BLM, they've been extremely supportive. They're the ones that put together this timeline, and they said it was on the safe side. So I think the biggest hurdle we currently have is with the power. And
that's great.
That's solvable because we're working with Jonah. Dave should know that answer shortly.
I got with Britt this morning, got feedback from him. He's got to run it up his chain a little bit to make sure that, nobody has any heartburn with it. But there's a tank battery. I was just looking on the GIS. It's about 2,700 feet. We're going to have to run power. If we run it down the easement to the road, there's a couple questions as to which side of the road that private line is on, whether or not we'll have, if it's on the south side of the road, we're going to have to do a bore under Lumen. That will be a little bit. But I spoke with the paleo guy, Josh Smith, this morning. Everything is good. We've just got to work out the details. So I think we're in pretty good shape.
I support moving forward with the green side completely. It's been my feeling from the beginning. I think everybody knows that.
Okay. Commissioner Vickery?
Well, Mr. Rauhauser said something about the money set aside before he was commissioner, and so this project obviously started way before I was commissioner. So here's for what it's worth, and bear with me for a moment. If you can.
Certainly.
So the total project is sort of is $500,000 for the new move to the new side. Say $500,000 because it's
sure. Close.
And then everything else is $2.5 to $3 million on top of that.
No. The stuff we're going to bolt to the site for the Harris radio system build-out,
right.
That's already in the roughly $4.5 million Harris contract. We would basically take the equipment and hardware that we were going to put on the Enterprise site and just relocate that to this new green site. So the additional cost to the county to move to this site is going to be roughly that $500K number, and all of the other stuff will migrate over.
Okay, so all the other stuff has already been paid for, is that what you're saying?
Right, we've already signed a contract with Harris to purchase that. You guys have already committed, the commission has already committed to do that.
So Mac's concern has been alleviated then?
Well, I think Mac's concern is where's this additional $500K coming from, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that there is money that has been earmarked for communication.
Well, I want to clarify Chad's response to Mac. The additional $500,000 is not contained within the Harris project amount.
Correct.
The additional $500,000 would have to come out a reserve account that we have for communications, okay. Which I think is $7 million that we have currently.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now bear with me as I go forward. Okay. And if we run into time, I can quit.
We're already there, but go ahead. Not your fault.
Okay, so the move to this new communication system was predicated upon the fact that WildLink was not what?
Adequate?
Okay. And it cost the county some, $100,000 a year or something to that effect?
The full bills.
Well, I don't think we knew what it was going to cost.
No. I mean, isn't that sort of what it was costing as a rental fee? No,
we never got a bill.
There were proposed full bills that the state was going to charge for usage and equipment ownership, but that has not gone into effect as of yet.
I see. Okay. So the way and I guess if the communications is what we need and what we rely on, and this is the way to go, this would be the way to go. But my concern would be, if we're going to put in a lot of money into this system, we've heard David say the tower will be 50, 60, 70 years, okay?
You can expect a realistic lifespan of 50, and maybe more.
Okay. So the way the system operates, what we put up today may be outdated tomorrow, so to speak.
10 to 15 years, 20 at an absolute maximum. The thing about concrete and steel, vertical steel, if it's high quality when you start, it's technology irrelevant. It's just a real estate platform to put whatever technology you want on. So a tower that was well built, years ago will work for modern antenna and modern equipment. no different now than it did when it was built for its original equipment. So.
Right, but I guess I didn't ask my question very well.
Oh, sorry.
So is the communication system that we're going to spend $4 to $5 million on going to last without change orders, so to speak, for the next 10 to 15 years, or is every 2 or 3 or 4 years as new progress is made in the in the communications world, are we going to be strapped with modifying for another $200,000 or $300,000 to keep up to speed?
No, the way we're building the platform out and the network out, the most significant changes that we will see in the initial 5 to 10 years will be software changes and updates. They're constantly changing, like upgrades on your Windows or upgrades on your cell phone. They do that same sort of stuff with the software that drives the network that controls the system. About every 10 years, you can expect hardware platform upgrades. Radios will change. Certain models will get dropped. Certain models will be superseded, upgraded. If the county at some point in the future chooses to add additional technologies, for example, LTE, which is essentially a cell phone technology, could be hooked into our system, and we could do other things with data applications in mobile vehicles, fire trucks, cop cars, that sort of thing. If we chose to do that later, yes, there would be a hardware component that would go along with that.
And if I could, I'd like to limit the discussion to what we're going to move going forward. I understand your concerns about those questions, but we have already committed $4.5 million to this project. This project goes on, but I would remind you as well that we're already 45 minutes over our schedule.
Sorry about that.
If we could limit the discussion to case in point, and I think what you're looking from us is a decision to move forward with this green site so that you can move forward with the CDR and proceed forward with the work that's being done with the BLM. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, Mr. Chairman, on that note, if I remember from our conversations yesterday with the BLM, we need to move forward with the paleontology and the
cultural and the surveying when the time comes.
And the surveying. So we need to give Dave some.
Well, I think what we're looking for, number one, we need to have a decision that we're going to go with the green site. That's number one. We need a motion to that effect.
So
after, okay. We have a motion to move forward with the green site for the tower. Seconded. Any other discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Now what we need is what you're referencing to in terms of moving forward with the cultural and paleontology and the other
survey.
Survey.
So how do you want it not to exceed number?
I have not got a number back from Josh, but I think if we went with not to exceed
15,000,
15,000 was the number that we were throwing around. And
is that just for paleontology? Or
that's for the cultural quote was 7,500, and everybody has told me that paleo will likely be no more than cultural, and plus whatever the engineering and surveying for the actual marking of the power line, because the BLM has to have that marked by a surveying company so that they can go do their cultural and paleo along that corridor, whatever that cost is going to be. And if you guys have Rio Verde on a retainer or a monthly contract, we would use them to do that. So however you want to.
Do we need to, Mr. Chairman, add a number for the surveying, or just direct Rio Verde to take care of it?
I don't think so. I think we'll get a cost estimate from them and approve it at that time, but we need to move forward with the motion to at least approve the survey.
So I make a motion we move forward with approve the survey and a number not to exceed on the cultural and paleo of $15,000.
Okay. Have a second?
Second.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Okay.
In that regard, so normally BLM does the NEPA on these things. Does this mean that we do the NEPA and BLM does a record of decision? How's this working? Or are we just paying BLM for the cultural and paleo?
We're not paying BLM. We're going to pay the private contractors that are going
to
do that.
We'll pay them to do it on behalf of BLM.
To give the report to the BLM to be included with our application.
All right.
And this is going, Joel, on the recommendation of what Caleb and Doug both want.
Right. That makes sense, and it is an EA according to.
So it meets that definition. Okay, okay.
It's and just an accelerated.
And the contractors knew exactly what we were talking about. And they, yeah. This is not their first rodeo. So.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chairman, is there a possibility if they ran into?
Oh yeah.
It would all stop dead in its tracks.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We have to reconsider.
Sure.
Some of the considerations there is we can alter the route or the locations somewhat.
Right. And Sam Drucker, who was the archaeologist that went out with us on the initial cultural, indicated that. He said, you know, if you find something that's really big and really hot, we go around it or we relocate you. The good news is we've got a quarter mile of hilltop, and the way they want the cultural, they want the entire hilltop evaluated. Once we do that, we'll know where the spots that don't have anything are. And we can move our lease is only going to be 50 feet square, so we're real flexible as far as where we can move.
So you're saying with that flexibility, we'll still be able to utilize that site?
Yes.
Because we do need to have that
very high likelihood
shared with the CDR, because if we don't, if those things change, we pay considerably for that.
Yeah, and that site's a big. There's plenty of room up there. We'll find a spot. The power cost will go up if we move farther away from power.
Not a project stopper.
It's not a showstopper.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, one other thing. Being so we've had a little bit of a discussion to not exceed. Does this also include the $475,000?
No,
not
sir.
Exceed.
No, sir.
So is it open book on that then, or not?
Well,
the only thing, Mr. Chairman, if I may, the only things that will really significantly change on that, Doug, would be the electrical cost, which is just an estimate, and I just pulled that out of thin air, just guessing.
Understand that.
That's going to be the biggest one. If we ran into, you know, ancient Mayan civilization, then obviously the paleo and the archaeological could go up. But based on what everybody knows about the site, the area, the historical data of the road out there, it's a pretty well-known area. Those were the numbers that we were given. So I think you're not to exceed, if you were looking for a pretty accurate number, would be right around 500.
But to answer your question, not to exceed was just for those cultural.
No, I understood that. But my concern is with all these type projects, and I appreciate David's expertise. Don't get me wrong there. It seems like at the end of the day, you start with one number, and you end up with a 20 or 30% more when you start writing a check. And that's my concern. Is there any indication, David, in your opinion, that this thing may cost, instead of estimated $475,000, could be 5.5 to 6?
It's always possible, but what I will say, the two large portions of that are the tower and the building, and those are fixed costs.
Okay.
I've got hard quotes from reputable contractors that we're using everywhere else in the project. The tower guy we've been using for 13 years, and when he gives a number, that's the number. So I'm comfortable with the two larger portions. All of the other stuff, yes, that could move around a little. I wouldn't foresee large changes unless it's the power. I mean, if we have to go from 100 meters of power to 4,000 or 5,000 feet, sure, that's going to change. Okay. But that's the best I can give you and look you in the eye and not tell you a story.
We have a motion and a second. If there's not any other questions, I'll call for the question. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, guys.
David, you might send us an email as soon as you get the power situation.
As soon as I get some info from Jonah. He said it'd be a couple days before you guys got back.
I need a motion for us to go into executive session to discuss litigation.
So moved.
Second.
What? The move and second and all the same?
Aye. 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 Thank you, gentlemen.